Welcome to Better Together with your hosts, Emily Italia and Jennifer Morrow. When we all work together, we are stronger and can accomplish more for the kingdom of God. And now, here are the hosts of Better Together, Emily Italia and Jennifer Morrow.
Hi, folks. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Better Together. I'm Emily Italia, and I'm blessed to be hosting with Jennifer Morrow.
Hello. Blessed. Aww.
Absolutely.
Made me feel good.
So how was your Easter and Holy Week, Jen? We're just coming off of a big grand celebration.
I know, right? It feels like a long time since we've been together. But yeah, since we were with everybody, we've had Holy Week and Easter, like you said. Busy, of course, work-wise, you know, covering the Palm Sunday, the Chrism Mass. But then I was blessed enough to have the teams stepped in so I could take some time off. I did get to celebrate Holy Thursday at my home. And then for Good Friday, I was on a plane to Germany.
Oh my goodness.
In Germany for a week. So I actually got to celebrate Easter in Germany.
Wow.
So it was beautiful.
What was that like compared to being at home?
Yeah, it was different. But I used to live in Germany for a few years. So we had gone back to see our friends who are really our family.
Aww.
And it was amazing to go to Easter Sunday Mass. So we were staying in the town that we used to live in, a small town called Euerbach in Bavaria.
Mm.
And we can just walk to church. We can be there in like 2 minutes.
Oh, how nice.
And it's, you know, all these cobblestone streets and green grasses. But, you know, one of the nice things in Germany is like when you're walking through the little towns and stuff, all of the like the little trees are decorated with the Easter eggs.
Yeah,
usually
that's right.
Ones that like people have made.
Right.
And there's usually little Easter baskets around. Sometimes there's a bunny floating around. So we walked into the church, and of course it was in German. But you can understand, you know,
right. You
get what's going on. But it was really, really nice to see. It's a small church, small town, so not tons of people. But there were a lot of families.
Aww.
And that was nice to see. There was, I would say, some with like little kids, like in the 9 to 10. And then the next generation was probably like 20s and 30s.
Wow.
And then after that, it was like 60s and 70s. So it was like all these different age groups, which was exciting to see. And then lots of music.
Oh,
lots of music, lots of incense.
Yeah.
And it was just beautiful to be back in there. It's very simple, I think. Overseas, the day is only about celebrating being with family, celebrating your faith. You know, lots of walks in through the grass and
good
pastures.
Weather.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good weather.
Oh, good.
It was really neat in this church specifically, in this town. The tabernacle is actually shaped like a stone.
Ooh.
So I couldn't figure. I knew it was the tabernacle because the candle was there. But I was like, I don't understand what is going on over there because it just looks like a stone. So comes time for the Holy Eucharist, celebration of the Eucharist, and they literally roll the stone up aside.
Oh,
and
wow.
I mean, it's very artistically done, obviously. It was very moving to see that, especially on Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
It just kind of, you know.
Appropriately thematic.
Absolutely. And then, so it was good. It was really amazing to be back and just to be in that culture again.
Excellent.
So what about you?
Oh, same. You know, I think every year I enjoy Holy Week and the Triduum and Easter celebration even more because I don't know if I'm picking up something different every time or just more appreciative, you know, with age of what the magnanimity of what's taking place. Mm-hmm. And as my kids have gotten older and have been able to maybe take in more of it, then I'm kind of seeing it through their experience too. And, you know, I mean, they're teenagers, so to a certain extent, you know, they're not as into it maybe that I am. But I have to say, this year, my daughter was really excited to participate. And she was even saying, you know, oh gosh, I wish Holy Week were longer because we had such a good, you know, celebration. And she's starting to connect a lot with our parishioners. So I think, yeah, I was just happy to see that.
I was going to say, where you're like, she's like, excuse me a minute, and like go in the back and like start secretly clapping to yourself. Like, yay, she's excited.
Well, you know, I mean, you don't want to project too far into the future, but, you know, just I'm very hopeful, you know, for both of them that they're getting to experience this. And, you know, we gave them the option, do you want to go on Easter Sunday? Because I had to be there for music anyway. And they're like, no, we're going to go on Saturday night. So So it's great. And this year we had all the lights off in the church except for the candles.
Okay.
And historically would keep more of those on just to make it a little easier for people to get into the church. But mm-hmm. once everybody had come in with their candles, they turned all the lights off. And just that view from the choir loft was just so incredible. And then my husband, of course, was doing something. I think he was reading one of the epistle or something. He was down front and he got to face all of the people holding their candles. And he's like, that view was just unreal.
Can't beat
No, you really can't. So got something good going.
Yeah. I like what you're talking about, like that, the community, that's another thing. And that's one of the things in Germany. It's like, especially with the small towns, there's usually at least one church in every town and the bells go off. Oh, so the bells go off in the morning, afternoon and night. But of course, Easter Sunday morning, they go off and it's spectacular. And it's just, you know, sleeping with the window open just a crack and to hear those bells.
Yeah.
Like calling you to the community you're going to celebrate with that morning was beautiful. We met a lot of people that morning. We do speak German, not super great, but well enough. And we got to communicate with them. So like you were saying, like that view, like it was different for us to see a different point of view and meet people we've never met before. So that's one thing I always love about the Easter services is excellent. Not only the new people coming into the church because you're meeting them or they're meeting you, but it seems like a theme of community a little bit for both of us.
Yeah, loving it. Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, good.
So Diocese of Camden, what do you got going on?
Diocese of Camden. So I came back from Germany and walked right into the next issue of the Catholic Star Herald. The next issue, Catholic Star Herald, is out. It has Easter coverage, of course, from around the diocese. We also have a wonderful article about a young man who has come into the church, and he was at Easter Vigil, and he was inspired to come into the church after the birth of his daughter, and she's now 10 months.
Wow.
So it's a really cute story.
Oh, I loved it.
So that's a highlight. We have another highlight of a woman who worked for the diocese for 43 years.
Ooh.
She's been there through five bishops, you know, so
wow.
She's got the stories and, you know, just working with other people, working throughout with other parishioners. She was an administrative assistant to a lot of different priests. So it's a great send off. And it's just a really eye opening view of, you know, maybe how the church has changed since when she came in the early 70s and how she progressed through her career. We got good stuff. We have tons more, but I don't want to have all the spoilers
We don't want to scoop everything.
We want you
to go read the paper.
Yeah. And we have a story that both of us will end up talking about. But first, let's hear what's in the monitor.
So this month, actually our April edition just came out. It should be in the mailboxes this week. On the cover, we've got our lovely Blue Mass photography. Blue Mass happens every year, either in the co-cathedral or the cathedral, and typically in April, celebrating all of our wonderful folks in law enforcement. And that was just a really beautiful occasion to commemorate people. And so that took place, and we have that at coverage. We're also previewing the upcoming National Eucharistic Pilgrimage and Congress that are taking place. And that's actually coming through a lot of our listening area. So what's exciting is next month we'll actually see some of these pilgrims coming through from New York all the way down through Diocese of Metuchen, Diocese of Trenton, and then that's crossing the bridge and going right over to Diocese of Philadelphia. And then these pilgrims are continuing all the way to Indianapolis. So from May all the way up until, I think, the Feast of Corpus Christi. Is that right? The Indianapolis conference is July 17th through the 21st.
Okay.
So that's what they're moving toward. And that whole time, they're bringing the Eucharist with them. And then people can join that pilgrimage along the way at different points. So we preview that in this issue. You can have a look and see where they're stopping and where you can participate. And they're even going to walk across the Lower Trenton Bridge.
Nice.
So
is anybody from the Diocese of Trenton participating that you know of?
We have a couple parishes that are actually working to host some of the pilgrims overnight. And then I think it's St. Mary's in Bordentown and St. Mary of, is it St. Mary's in Manahawkin? I think it might be. And then the Trenton Cathedral.
Okay.
So it would be three different opportunities, I believe, there to take part in a little pilgrimage, take part in a mass, and maybe hear, you know, special homily specifically about the Eucharist. So, you know, definitely want to check that out and see how you can participate.
And I know that the Diocese of Metuchen is also taking part in that. I've heard a lot of talks. Not to leave out the other diocese, I just don't know about the other diocese,
but
I know Metuchen is
also. So, yeah, we focused on the places where it was stopping in the Diocese of Trenton, and there are at least three or four other stops in Diocese of Metuchen. And then, of course, in, you know, northern part of the state, you know, right where it crosses into New York, stuff going on in New York. So lots of opportunities to take part.
You're going
to
take part?
I'd like to, at least maybe at the cathedral. I think that'd probably be the most accessible for me.
Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah, maybe I'll drive down. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, nice.
And I actually got to talk to Congressman Chris Smith and his wife Marie for our Be Inspired feature.
Okay.
So definitely check that out. Actually, I think it'll be online sometime the next few days as well, but you'll want to take a look on in the monitor and just kind of get to learn a little bit more about how much he and his wife have been doing for, gosh, it's half a century now of defending human dignity. So they've really just been wonderful advocates.
Mm-hmm. So. I always know when I'm looking at legislation and if it has to do with human trafficking or religious freedom, among many other things, I know that Chris Smith will be one of those sponsors because those are, you know, among his passions as a faithful Catholic.
And
well,
he's probably one of the busiest people. He's like chaired over 600 hearings and it's something unreal. I think he just chaired one the other day.
I can't wait to read it, actually.
Yeah,
I've had the honor of only speaking with him once and he was genuinely a very nice man.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic people.
Cool.
Great.
All right. I can't look.
And speaking of legislation, we have something coming up. There's an action alert on njcatholic.org. Help me with the URL here. I wrote it down.
Yeah, no problem. Like, so it's the NJCC,
which
is the New Jersey Catholic Conference. And they are the public policy arm of New Jersey's Catholic bishops. So they have a new action alert out for people to reach out to your lawmakers to ask for funding for non-public school when it comes to busing services or transportation services and nursing.
Right.
And now is the time to contact your lawmakers. And if you don't really know what to write when you contact them, as Emily was saying, you can go to njcatholic.org/faith-in-action. And they actually pretty much give you a template there that you can fill out. And also there's some talking points. So if you want to know more about this issue when it comes to school transportation and nursing, it's a really important, you know, I know that we've both covered this for a very long time in our respective dioceses. When it comes to school transportation, I've actually, and I know you have too, interviewed students who have to get on a bus an hour before they have to be at school, and then they're doing an hour commute home. You know, that's 2 hours. They're commuting 2 hours already, but you know, before they're an adult. And you know, imagine if you're already doing that and to lose that transportation, how much earlier or later would a student, you know, be able to get to their Catholic school or get home?
Or in many cases, that's the deal breaker, and they can no longer attend a private school. They, you know, are at the mercy of whatever schools in their district where they're not going to get the faith formation
right
they do in our Catholic schools.
Right. And when it comes to nursing is another one. They would like to, I'm actually going to literally read this because, and of course I didn't bring my readers in here. I'm just letting the YouTube watchers know when I pick up this paper and hold it way away from my face. But they were these are among the talking points for nursing. It says when nursing services began in the early 90s, the per pupil amount was $60 per pupil. The current amount is $120. So in other words, and you know, that's a long time for it not to go up anymore. And nurses are responsible for a lot more things than they were in the early 90s, including new medicines for asthma, the need for Narcan, and just a lot of, you know, new medicines that are around. So, you know, if you have a child in Catholic school or you know somebody or you just want to support our Catholic schools to see that non-public schools can get the same funding when it comes to nursing and transportation.
And I have another point on that is just I don't know if people realize if they don't have children in Catholic school that this is something that comes up every single year.
Mm-hmm.
We basically have to fight for funding for these basic things that are provided, you know, without thought to public schools. It just comes straight out of the budget,
right
through the taxes and busing and nurses. In many cases, if they can't get the funding, then the transportation goes away.
Yep.
You lose the bus or you lose a nurse or you get a nurse maybe 3 days a week instead of 5 days a week.
Right.
And that's really a hardship for kids who have allergies or, you know, you have an emergency. You know, the teachers may not be as equipped as a nurse is to deal with some of these health issues. So it's a real concern.
Yep. So again, go to what do you go to?
I've got it. I got it this time. It's njcatholic.org/faith-in-action. And that'll bring up the template and you can just put in your contact information. And it gives you a little space if you want to add a little something extra so that you can kind of make it a little more personal.
All right. Well, we have touched on the news of the state, or at least a couple dioceses. We're going to take a break to welcome our guest, and we'll be right back. All right.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life, lives of unborn children. And they got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism and the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
For the Jews of old, the temple was the holiest place in the universe, and the spiritual center of the temple was the Holy of Holies. It was blocked off by a thick curtain, and only the high priest could enter to offer sacrifice to God. He had to have a rope tied around his ankle in case he died in there so he could be dragged out because no one else was ever allowed in. I lead a pilgrimage to the Holy Land every year, and to this day, you can see Jewish people from around the world come to the Wailing Wall, the closest place to where the Holy of Holies was, just to touch that wall. When Jesus died, the curtain separating the Holy of Holies was torn in two, not from bottom to top, which man could have done, but in an act of God from top to bottom. Why? Because in the New Covenant, God's dwelling place is you. You are the holiest place in the universe. Do you live like it? This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Better Together. I'm Jen Morrow, and I'm with
Emily Italia. Nice to see you.
So we've been talking a little bit about what's been going on in the Diocese of Trenton and Camden and beyond. But we haven't told you what we're going to talk about for the rest of the show, and we have a guest to do that, too. So first, I'm going to introduce our guest, and then I'm going to tell you what the show's about.
Good plan.
So with us today, we have Donna Ottaviano-Britt. She is the Director of Discipleship and Leadership for the Diocese of Camden. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hi, Donna. It's nice to talk to you.
I'm doing fine. Nice to meet you too.
So, Donna, we did not tell the radio show what this is going to be about today. So, what we are talking about is Easter joy. We just started the Easter season and the 50 days leading up to Pentecost, and you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about how to have Easter joy, just joy in general, and also how to witness it. And when I ran into you today, or knew I was going to see you, I was like, you know what? Donna is the epitome of joy. I'm going to ask her to be on the show.
That's a high compliment, Jen. I'm the epitome of joy. I'm not sure everybody would say that, but it is the Easter season, so we're doing our best, right?
That's right. So what would be some of your, like when Easter joy comes to mind, like what kind of advice would you have? You know, it can be a difficult world out there these days. How can people keep Easter joy in their heart?
I think one of the things that would be important for us to remember, and I hold myself accountable to it, is understanding that Easter is far longer than a single day. We have a tendency to focus on Easter as a single day, but even just the daily readings, right, from Mass, so much of it is in the Acts of the Apostles that we're hearing every day. So I think looking at what their witness was, you know, the apostles, I mean, nearly all of them were martyred. Most of us are not going to have that experience. So can we not be in a position to share the person of Jesus? I think drawing closer to that idea of a personal relationship with Jesus, who sacrificed so much for us out of love. What a wonderful idea to keep alive for ourselves for this entire Easter season. And Easter season is longer than the Lenten season. So we are the people of joy. So I think that's part of how we can do it. And really to look to the ways that Jesus has impacted our own lives and think about what it's like to talk about that with other people. I apologize for the fire engine sirens in the background.
No problem.
Just adding some texture to the conversation.
That's right. I like how you mentioned about the apostles. Like, you know, the apostles weren't always happy. You know, I mean, they grieved. Mm-hmm. They left their families. Some died in terrible ways. How is that an example that even when there are bad things going on in our lives, if we keep Jesus at the center, we can not only persevere, but not try to live on those highs and lows all the time?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, St. Ignatius of Loyola has taught about spiritual consolation and spiritual desolation, right? Spiritual desolation is when God feels far. Spiritual consolation is when he feels close. And, he has a series of rules that help you sort of manage through those things. But to your point, Jen, specifically looking at the apostles and what they went through, I often think of them in terms of the, you know, what we would easily refer to now as PTSD, is right, watching their rabbi, watching their teacher, watching this man that they love so much, and the trauma of his torture and his death, and how afraid they were after his death. And then he returns to them glorified. And what happens to them when they receive the Holy Spirit? They are unstoppable. And I love that about them. And the Acts of the Apostles is really such a fine example to us of thinking how much grief they had, how much trauma they had. And all of us experience grief in our lives. Many of us experience some level of trauma from minor to major in our lives. So the fact that Jesus is there kind of holding out his hand to us. And we know from the writings of Acts of the Apostles and others that they just were not to be stopped in terms of sharing their experience of him, and they give that to us through tradition. So I think there's real joy in that, even when we're suffering. So this may not feel like a time of Easter joy for some people because they're actually suffering and they're grieving, but Jesus is right there for them. And I think that's the best way to think about finding your way into joy, because joy is not the same as happiness either. So,
I was going to ask about that, actually. I was going to ask because I think that gets confused a lot in our current secular culture. Happiness is so dependent on external experience or external happenstance rather than joy, which is something that you can only get from that's constant, you know, something like Christ or God. So how would you describe that to someone who's really kind of stuck in the idea of, well, my happiness is dependent upon my circumstance?
Yeah, I think, and think about how you would witness that to someone else, right? So I love your question. And I think all of us have to think about how would we answer that for someone? Like anyone who says, you know, like you said, my happiness is determined by my circumstances. Well, it might be. I mean, I can really be happy with a really fabulous new pair of shoes, but it's temporary, right? I love shoes.
So it won't be new forever
for me.
That's right.
You know, but that's really temporary. Yet, my joy comes from something greater, something I can't necessarily see, that there isn't evidence of, but Jesus has been ever present in my life. I think an important thing for people to consider is to look in your own life and look across your own story and see where God has been. I would particularly direct people to look at where you thought he left you in that space, because he didn't really. So can you find him there? And that's really the joy, I think, that can come for people as they, you know, move further into their spiritual lives and their faith life, is that he never leaves. I think we back up from him, you know, because we can be so despondent or distraught or think that I'm not happy, when really my joy is because this is not all there is, right? There's something amazing that will come after this. And I do help talk to people about, okay, you need to aim for heaven and land in purgatory, but do not aim for purgatory, because if you miss purgatory, it's a really serious miscalculation.
That's good. I like that. You know, somebody told me a really good quote today. God inhabits what he creates. Do you think, you know, we're made for joy? You know, you think remembering that, you know, God inhabits what he creates can help people, all of us, remember that joy in our hearts?
Yes, I think that's a really great statement that you're sharing, Jen, because I think we can get so caught up in the daily grind of our lives, you know, just the day to day of trying to take care of children and keep the house clean and get dinner on the table and go to work and you know, weave in some of the harder seasons of life in all of that. But really, he created us, right? He delights in us. He breathed life into us with tremendous purpose. And so the idea that he lives in us, it's just a remarkable thing to think the God of the universe, who created all things, created each of us. And so he does inhabit us. How is that not a joyful thought, that the God of the universe lives and resides in us and animates our lives? So I think just meditating on that, you know, in times of struggle and even in times of joy, just to give thanks and praise that he has done that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, in that we need to remember to be grateful for our joy no matter when it occurs. And it's sometimes, you know, you get caught up in the happy occasion and you kind of forget the source of that happiness. You know, we all have people in our lives, or maybe we individually are struggling with huge challenges that make joy feel just completely inaccessible. And these circumstances, you know, maybe they're not fleeting. Maybe they're something that's been hanging around and you just don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think one of the harder aspects is to reconnect to that joy in the season of Easter, in the seasons of our lives, in spite of the challenges. And, you know, I think Mother Teresa is just an amazing example of that, because she went through so many years of not having that consolation. And sometimes we're not going to get that feeling, you know, and maybe that joy isn't going to feel the same way it does that when our circumstances are wonderful. But she didn't lose that connection, because she knew God was there. Even though she couldn't feel that consolation, she just trusted and said, you know, this is the way it is right now and I feel lost, but I'm going to keep being faithful to the path he's chosen for me and to the mission he's sent me on. Did you want to speak to, like, how do we help anyone in our lives who is in a position like that, where they're just not seeming to be able to access that joy, just their circumstances are so, they're so downtrodden, they just don't seem to be able to connect?
Yeah, I think I'm bringing up, you know, St. Teresa of Calcutta is a remarkable example, because, and we didn't learn the details of her dark night, you know, and how long it lasted until after she had died. and look at the way we react to her and the photos of her with that smile. She's remarkable. And so she is a perfect example of knowing God is there. Didn't feel like he was, but she knew he was there, right? That deep faith. She looked joyful in all of those pictures and that beautiful smile on her face. And if you look at what she did, she was a great accompanier. And I think your question, Emily, like using her as an example, we have to be able to walk with our friends and family and coworkers. You know, Pope Francis is calling for accompaniment for, I think, his entire papacy. And so what is it like for us to walk with another human being who's struggling? And I'm sure all of us know somebody in our orbit right now who are, you know, some of us are like, this is great. I love Easter. There's so much to be joyful about. You know, if we've given a thought beyond Easter. But we also know someone who's having a hard time harnessing that. So what are we doing for them? You know, how are we walking with them? How are we being present to them? Are we sharing our own witness? Part of a conversation lately is that people don't need our information. We live in an age of massive amounts of information. It's so easy to find at our fingertips. But what they need is us being present, and what they need is our witness. So I think part of it is accompaniment and relating and having empathy for somebody who may be struggling to find the joy, and it feels impossible and it feels far as though they will never get it back. But then to just be fully present with them and to share your own experience of that time. I think witness is powerful in terms of giving people hope. They may not find their own joy right away, but we want to be able to help our brothers and sisters to find hope at a time like that.
And hopefully our experiences where we haven't felt joyful that we can witness to when we're around our friends and family who are struggling, they can see that, well, you know, right now we're experiencing that Easter joy in spite of having been through these difficult times. And that can hopefully help give them a sense of hope that, you know, this isn't going to be this way permanently. I will return to that sense of joy and that sense of Christ in my life. But in the meantime, you know, you can, like you said, be there, be present, accompany, don't abandon them because they're not in a great mood. Yeah. You know, you just kind of.
And, you know, Donna, you mentioned something, you know, what they need is our witness. I like how you said that, because I think that we can tend to think, well, I can't be the person who lifts this person up. I don't have it in me, or I got something else going on in my own life. I can't do it. But sometimes you have no idea of, like, the smallest little movement or action that you can do actually turns out to be the witness they need.
Mm-hmm. So what is that? Yeah. That's trusting in the Holy Spirit to give you the words to say to them about your own story.
That's a great point, because I think sometimes we feel like we have to know what to say or know how to respond. And I think maybe just being that vessel, being that go-between, and just say, okay, I'm here, you know, use me in whatever way I'm supposed to be used in this moment.
Yeah.
Right. Because didn't Jesus say it in the scriptures? I'm not one to quote, you know, the book, the verse, the line, because I don't know it well enough. But I believe he told his apostles and disciples, do not worry about what you are to say. The Holy Spirit will give you the word. So I think if we're open and receptive to that, particularly for this person, I believe what needs to be spoken to this person will actually come through us to help them.
That's right. I mean, we all of those who have been through the sacrament of confirmation have access to those graces. So, you know, we just have to remember that we do, and to say, okay, I'm ready. Work through me.
Right.
I'll do my best.
I'm ready.
I like that. I'm ready. Let's get t-shirts. Let's get matching t-shirts that say I'm ready.
I'm I'm ready, Holy Spirit, you know? Yes. And then when you say that, you could potentially be like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not quite sure, because the Holy Spirit has very big plans, you know, for each of us. I also think the importance of praying, right, of interceding on the behalf of the person who's in this place is a very important action for us to take. Jesus teaches in Scripture, right? What is the most important thing that we can do is prayer. And so I think interceding on their behalf and, you know, kind of going to adoration or saying prayers for them or offering up, you know, their suffering in mass that they could be comforted in some way. I also think praying with the person in real time. You know, I've spent a lot of my own life telling someone I would pray for them. I've shifted that probably in the last decade, is I pray for them in the moment, like right there with them, and they hear someone praying for them. I think it can be a very powerful experience for them that you're asking for comfort for them, you're asking for transformation for them, and they can hear you. They can actually hear your words, and it's not something you'll do in the future. It's something you'll do right then. Very powerful.
That is powerful. What is the reaction when you say you want to do that? Are they surprised? Are they?
So I've never had anyone tell me, no, I don't want you to do that. But I also don't give them a lot of time to turn me down. I just say, are you okay? I'd like to pray for you right now. Are you okay? And they might just think I'm going to pray quietly in my head for them, but I don't. Right? I do not. I pray for them out loud with them, you know, and even in a crowd, you can do it very close to them. So not everyone is listening to your prayer for them. But I think I don't know anyone, even those that are not deeply faithful, that would decline having prayer said for them. So I really think our ability to pray in real time with someone right there in their presence, being present to them, I think it's a powerful moment of grace, not only for us who are interceding on their behalf, but I really think there's power for them.
I love that.
And can help them get through.
That's a great reminder.
Donna, next time I see you, will you just break into prayer with me? Because I can tell you I will need it.
I will if you want. If you want, Jen, I'm going to do it with
you.
Okay. Yeah.
Donna, thank you so much for being on with us. You're always just have a lot of good insight. And we really appreciate you taking some time to talk about joy with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
It was a pleasure to meet you,
Donna. It was really wonderful to be with the two of you.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Everybody, we will be right back to talk about more joy with Better Together.
Hello, I'm Bishop David O'Connell, the Bishop of the Diocese of Trenton, and this is a Eucharistic moment. Pope Benedict XVI wrote, "In the Eucharist, the Son of God comes to meet us and desires to become one with us." Eucharistic adoration is simply the natural consequence of the Eucharistic celebration, which is itself the Church's supreme act of adoration. Receiving the Eucharist means adoring Him whom we receive. Only in this way do we become one with Him and are given, as it were, a foretaste of the beauty of the heavenly liturgy. The act of adoration outside Mass prolongs and intensifies all that takes place during the liturgical celebration. In a world where there is so much noise, so much bewilderment, there is a need for silent adoration of Jesus concealed in the host. Be assiduous in the prayer of adoration and teach it to the faithful. It is a source of comfort and light, particularly to those who are suffering.
It started like it does for many people. Question my faith and question authority. And I feel that the reason why I left was the draw of the world. The world was pulling me away. Some people would say, you know, Satan was working on me. He did not want me in church. He wanted me to be desperate. He wanted me to have the thoughts of suicide. I started to realize that a lot of the things that I had experienced in my life were a result of my rebellion against God and against authority. Coming back to the church is the first step in healing from all of the hurts of the world. I went from being desperate and in despair to finding hope and encouragement for the future. I'm on God's team. I know who I belong to, and I know where I'm going, and there's nothing that can separate me from God's love.
Take another look at the Catholic Church. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Welcome back to Better Together. I'm Emily Italia.
I'm Jen Morrow.
And we are talking about Easter joy and how we can access the joy that's available to us through the Holy Spirit, through the celebration of Easter, and how we can be a witness toward that to others. And Jen, you had some ideas that you were going to share about other ways that we can be an active witness of that during the
Yeah, I was season. Just, I was really moved by what Donna was talking about, our guest that was just on. And, you know, she was talking about, well, we were all discussing this concept that, you know, sometimes we might think that we have to be this super holy person to help others along who might not have joy, but sometimes it could be the smallest of actions.
Right.
And I was going to share that, you know, before I went to Germany, I was not in the best of mental places. I did not have Easter joy,
Aww.
You know, and so much so that I was like, I don't even want to go to Germany. And Aww. I haven't been back in 12 years and you know, our friends there are family. So, you know, we got off the plane, we got there, and one of our very good friends picked us up. And, you know, there's like, it's been 12 years since we've seen each other, even though we talk on Skype, not Skype. What is it now? FaceTime. Whatever it is these days. And we got in the car, and my husband promptly fell asleep in the back seat because it's an 8-hour flight.
Ugh.
And my friend Mario is driving, and he gives me a gift. And the gift is, when I was in Germany, I used to journal a lot as a journalist. And he always remembered that. I was always carrying the journal around journaling. And he gave me a little leather journal. And he said, this is for your adventures for this week.
Aww.
And in the front of the journal was a coffee card. You know, after you go get a certain amount of coffees, you get a free coffee.
Oh, yeah.
I had given him the coffee card 12 years ago when I left. I said, and it says in German, here's my coffee card. It's a free coffee because it was full.
Oh.
He saved it for 12 years.
What?
Including the note that was on it.
Oh, my
goodness. And it was on in the book so that when I opened it, it was there. And that small moment of just absolute love and friendship that made me feel that I was loved not just by this person, but it's across the globe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's across the globe. And the entire family that we're friends with there's about 10 of them, are the same way. And I came back with Easter joy, not because of anything we saw. We didn't tourist around, but because of the absolute love and time. We played games. We went on walks. We had a lot of coffee. There's a lot of coffee and cake over there. Yes, I probably gained 5 pounds. But it was the time
right.
to be present, like Donna said, being present for someone else. And they witnessed to me that I came back with Easter joy.
It was so restorative to your spirit.
It was.
Have that connection.
And I mean, I cried like the whole way home because, Aww. You know, I was like, it's been a long time since I felt that. Not for any reason. I'm very blessed. I can't tell you that I'm sick. There's no actual physical reason. Just life, right? Yeah. Life, like we were talking about.
Busyness of life sometimes pulls us away from those connective opportunities, and we don't realize it until we're just depleted.
Exactly.
And then it's like, oh, wow, why am I so just kind of blah and tired and not excited about whatever's on the horizon? And it could be that just you need that reconnection with other people, with your spiritual life, you know, in combination of. So,
and there were so beautiful. Many laughs that because like we were all laughing and they speak English. We speak German, like I said, but it's not always perfect. So there's a lot of mashups
sure.
too. And I know this is going to sound like so goofy, but because everybody was laughing the whole time and, you know, like, I don't know, I look at people's eyes a lot, especially when you're laughing. I was just struck by the idea that a person's eyes, especially when they're laughing, look like a Jesus fish because the eye looks like the fish as it is. But then when you squint, you get the little wrinkles on the corners.
Oh, wow.
And that was the tail. And I'm sorry, but once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the entire time I was there, that's what I was thinking about. Like this idea of God being love. Wow. And there's little Jesus fish eyes. I'm just saying, I know it sounds a little
okay, so
out there.
So now I'm going to be looking.
But next time you're laughing with someone, look at their eyes, especially if they're at least 47 like me and there's already wrinkles there.
Right. You got to have the obvious, you know,
Right.
Under a certain age, it's not going to work.
Not going to work. No. So, but that being said, you know, what are some ways that that's how they showed me Easter joy without even knowing it?
Right.
What are some ways that maybe we can show others Easter joy? And I was recently reading an article about that. And here are some suggestions.
Excellent.
So,
taking notes.
Yes, here we go. So, one of them was host a neighborhood gathering, maybe like on a Sunday afternoon, especially as the weather is getting nicer. Ask everybody to bring a dish or a beverage, because what better way is there to live out love our neighbor?
I love that.
That's a simple one, I think, too.
I think so. And I think there's something about asking people to contribute a little something. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, I mean, you could just throw a party and say, everybody come and eat. But it's a little different when you have, let me bring a little something of myself to this gathering. And then it just changes the character.
I agree.
And, you know, like, you're kind of contributing to each other's enjoyment.
Especially since, like, sometimes recipes can, like, go back generations. That can be some great conversation starters.
Totally. Totally.
Another one idea is put together a small basket or box of goodies and deliver it to your neighbor or a shut-in or grandparents, young couple with a new baby. Stay anonymous if you want. That way you can just leave the basket on the front steps or deliver it. You know, it could even be just a homemade card. It's just showing somebody else that you see them, and that they are seen. And sometimes that's all somebody needs, is to see that they're seen.
I love that. And sometimes making up the basket, thinking of things that would make them happy, you know, that in the moment, just that's so much fun too. Get a little creative and gets you thinking about the person. And I love that.
I do too. Or flowers, you know. I'm not going to say it out loud. Never mind, I'm taking that back. No, you know, I'm going to say it. Like, I know some people in life who are like, why am I spending all these money on flowers? They die in a week. But I'll tell you, I love getting flowers. I know they die in a week. But you know what? We need a little beauty in our lives.
That's right. And having them concentrated on your kitchen counter or wherever you put them, and you get to see them all the time, it's a reminder that somebody thought enough of you to offer this gesture of beauty.
Agreed.
So.
And another one that was suggested is make a Friday night movie night with your family or your friends, whoever you're close to. You know, it doesn't have to be expensive. You could just pick a streaming service or a movie, you know, DVD, if anybody's like me and still has a huge collection of DVDs.
We do, too.
You know, just get together with people you love and or play a game.
I was going to say family game night neighbor game night. We've had some great ones. And those are usually the ones where the memory of spending the time together is what you take with you. You know, not necessarily, I don't know, we're not super competitive. But just, you know, I don't care who wins. I just want to spend time with these people. So,
you know, so we used to play this game in Germany called Settlers of Catan. Ooh. And they have it here in America. In Germany, it's called Siedler. But anyway, I mean, it was, we would religiously play that like almost every night or on the weekends. When we went back, we couldn't wait to play it. They hadn't played it in the 12 years we left.
Are you kidding? Mm-mm. Oh, wow.
I couldn't believe it. So we played, we laughed. And by the time we left, my friend Mario, who I was referencing, he has a family now, two young children. The kids wanted to learn it, so he had the children's version, and he's already texted me a few times saying, okay, now I'm playing Settlers of Catan with my kids.
Oh, great.
And I'm like, I hadn't played in 12 years. So
wow.
You gotta love that.
Awesome.
Love it.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but, you know, besides doing those, there are other great ways to find your Easter joy, and one of those is to possibly find a retreat.
And I can't speak to personal experience on this outside of a few group retreats that were, you know, they weren't organized. I'd never initiated like, oh, okay, I need to go on a retreat. I never pursued one on my own. But every time I've been on one, I've come back feeling like, why don't I do this more often? Because I'm getting something from it, whether it's kind of a spiritual reminder or a reconnection. And the whole purpose is to remove yourself from the day-to-day and to refocus on your spiritual connection, on your relationship with God, your, you know, removing all the distractions. A lot of times you go on a retreat and it's, you know, okay, no cell phones, no computers, we're going to get all the distractions out of your life, and you are forced in this, you know, setting, whether it's with other people or if it's a personal single retreat or silent retreat, you are forced to contend with that spiritual relationship and kind of where where you are with that. And, you know, I think it's high time that I kind of explore that myself. And I think it could all do us a lot of good to kind of, you know, if you're not experiencing that Easter joy, or even if you are, just kind of a reminder that this is where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So reconnect. And I was amazed when I was starting to do some research for this that the number of retreat opportunities and retreat houses we have at our disposal. I was going to go through them all. There's really too many, and we're, you know, not going to have enough time. But I was going to refer everybody just to, for the Diocese of Trenton, it's diocesetrenton.org/retreat-houses. And they have a list of all the ones that are available in our area with all the contact information. And they have tons of retreats coming up. Every type you could imagine, whether you want to do it with a group, by yourself. And a lot of these places have pretty nice accommodations. So it can be pretty, like, you know, almost like a little mini personal vacation.
And they're located in beautiful spots.
They
and we
are.
Have quite a few in the Diocese of Camden, too. I know Metuchen does, and Newark and Patterson. So every diocese in our state has a list of retreat homes. And, I can speak to the ones in the Diocese of Trenton since I live in the Diocese of Trenton. But I've also been to one or two, actually, in the Diocese of Camden, one in Cherry Hill, which is run by Franciscans. And it is on a very peaceful piece of property where there's areas to walk. You know, like Emily was saying, that, you know, there some are led retreats, but some are silent retreats with a lot of time of prayer, which is one thing our guest Donna was talking about is prayer is central to Easter joy and keeping us connected to God and Jesus as the center when everything can be topsy turvy. So I would
and they
say,
really facilitate that ability to pray because you're removed from everything that's distracting you. It's probably easier to make that prayerful time fruitful.
Right.
You're just, you know, okay, this is what I'm here to do. I'm going to concentrate completely on this.
And I don't know if I personally could do a silent retreat. I think that's obviously why.
I was thinking the same thing for myself. Like after 5 minutes, I'm like, where are the people?
I don't think I could do it. But I have heard wonderful things about the silent retreat.
I have too.
And all jokes aside, I probably would enjoy it because I wouldn't feel the need to feel silent.
I don't know if I could do a week. A week would be a lot.
No, I couldn't do a week.
But some of them, you know, are 48 hours.
Yeah, I could do that.
Probably manage that. Especially
we should do it together and see if we could do it. There's no way we're doing that. We just start looking at each other and laughing.
I'd have to be in a completely different area. Like, okay, I'll see you in a couple days.
Without a doubt. Everybody, goodness. I definitely recommend going, no matter what diocese you're in New Jersey, go to your diocesan website. There's tons of resources there when it comes to retreats. Something else we didn't talk about is a spiritual advisor. Spiritual advisors can be another wonderful resource for helping you find your spiritual center.
And a lot of these places, these retreat houses, do have spiritual advisors, or they can connect you with one. So if you're not looking to do a retreat, but you just want to have somebody to connect with, they can put you in touch with somebody who's right for you.
I did have a spiritual advisor for a while through my parish.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a lot of parishes have them as well. So it was definitely worth it. I think people might not I didn't understand, I'll tell you honestly, what it was, but it boosts your spiritual life. Just like going to a mental health professional would help with that. This helps boost your spiritual life and gives you best spiritual practices, especially when it comes to prayer.
I'm going to say, like, you might be returning to the same things over and over and saying, yeah, I'm just not getting that same efficacious, you know, I feel kind of like I'm in a spiritual rut. And
right.
Maybe they can help get you out of that.
Exactly.
So, I like that
idea. Yeah. And if that doesn't work, game night.
Game night. We've got something for everybody, no matter where you're falling in the Easter joy.
I think Jim just rolled his eyes.
Enough of these ladies. Oh, my goodness.
All right, it's been a great show once again, and looking forward to the next one.
Right.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I hope very much so that you find your Easter joy, or that you found some good ideas from the show on how to find it. And see you next time.
Looking forward to it, everybody. Happy Easter.